Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, it's Jonathan Strickland, and I'm here to introduce a playlist of 10 episodes of my podcast, Tech Stuff, that are all about entertainment and entertainment-related fields, from video games to television series to films to internet videos from yesteryear. So I hope you guys enjoy these episodes. You can go to the Tech Stuff podcast page and subscribe to listen to all sorts of episodes about tech from all realms. And hopefully this will provide a little bit of entertainment, a little bit of education, and probably more than a few puns, because that's kind of how I roll. Enjoy this playlist. Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And we thought we would bring to you a playlist of some fun episodes for stuff to listen to while we all try to get through these trying times. And the first one, I think, is a real doozy. We really knock it out with a funny pair of people, the Brothers Chaps, the creators of Homestar Runner. My former super producer, Ramsey, ended up landing me an interview with these two gents. They came into the studio and we had a great conversation. And stick around to the very end, because a special guest gave me a very special sign-off for that episode. Hope you enjoy. I am overjoyed to be joined in the studio by Matt and Mike Chapman, also known as the Brothers Chaps, the creators of Homestar Runner, as well as many other projects. And it's a bit of a fanning out, geek out moment for me. I've been a fan of Homestar Runner since before I was working at How Stuff Works. And really, it's great to have two people here who their work preceded the age of YouTube web series, because YouTube didn't exist when you guys launched Homestar Runner. And anyone who has been on the internet for any length of time has at least encountered Homestar Runner references if they're not deeply familiar with the incredible lore and mythology. The deep legends of Homestar Runner that have found their way into all sorts of other mythos. I mean, you're part of the Buffyverse. Yeah, guys.
Yeah, that was a cool one. Now, somehow we're responsible for the Doge meme, even though we didn't really have anything to do with that.
Yeah. Well, you have an incredible couple of bonus tracks on Guitar Hero 2, yeah, which have confounded me on numerous occasions. So, I mean, the influence just keeps on going. But for people who have never seen a Homestar Runner cartoon, they're not familiar with it. I can't wait
to
hear.
Don't bother at this point.
You missed the boat. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Just go to knowyourmeme.com and you'll find stuff. No, I want to hear from you guys because I'm really curious to hear your elevator pitch for what is Homestar Runner?
Homestar Runner.
I like the Matt's furrowed brow right now as he struggles with this.
It's a series of animated shorts following the exploits of non-humanoid, ageless organisms that interact with one another in meaningful and humorous ways to the delight of several.
Of literally dozens of people.
That's the elevator pitch, and that's why we just did this ourselves and never had any...
I mean, I'm starting to get
Success. A
gleam of the marketing brilliance.
Yeah, exactly.
That has been part of Homestar Runner since the very beginning. So I know you guys have talked about this in other interviews, but I would love it if you could kind of walk people through the origin of where this all came from. Because it all, I mean, I know it's kind of a mishmash story because Homestar Runner itself ends up being a reference to a weird joke that kind of came up of a local Atlanta ad spot, right?
Yeah, so our friend Jamie Huggins was mimicking a Kroger or Winn-Dixie ad that Mark Lemke was on in probably 1994 or something. Jamie doesn't know a lot about sports, so instead of saying, all-star second baseman for the Braves, Mark Lemke, he was trying to parody this commercial and said, and now Homestar Runner for the Braves, Mark Lemke. And we're all just like, Jamie, what is the Homestar Runner? And so then a couple years later, we kept using that phrase and decided to use it as the name of a character when we were bored one day and made a story involving Homestar Runner.
This is great because, you know, it's the sort of thing, I think it's an inspirational story, honestly, because I know I've got lots of friends, we goof off and we make, you know, you'll make a joke and every now and then a joke is just, it's sticky. It's something that for some reason resonates beyond just the moment of making an offhand absurd reference. And then it kind of snowballs from there and it can grow. And to me, that's sort of what Homestar Runner sounds like. It was something that began as just sort of this one-off little goof, but it ended up inspiring a huge number of shorts. So after the little joking about a local ad spot, and by the way, if you ever really need to mine for comedy gold, you just have to find some great local Atlanta commercials. I've seen so many amazing ones, including people I know have showed up in them, like Chris Blair of Dad's Garage character. But if you guys then went on and started looking at things like children's books and seeing how terrible children's books can be and thought, we can do a terrible children's book. And Homestar Runner had a spot in that. But beyond that, we get into the late 90s, early 2000s, and the World Wide Web was really just starting to get some really serious traction at that point, right? We're seeing kind of the end phase of what people later on would call the Web 1.0 era, where everything was very static. Nothing was interactive. You would probably have a web page and it wouldn't change from one month to the next. So there's no reason to ever go back. You go once and that's it.
You made a new web page. You didn't update your web page.
Right.
Here's my new web page.
Right.
You got a new URL and you started something else.
And you would have to have the little under construction picture at the very top, right? Because it's never finished, except for the fact that it's always kind of finished. So you got interested in Flash animation and Flash in general, and this is interesting to me because it gave an opportunity to have a more dynamic experience on the web, something that was totally new at that time. Today, we take it for granted. You know, every website is dynamic in some way or another, or has some sort of dynamic element worked into it. But at that time, it was pretty new. And the concept of creating episodic content that you could very easily see, you know, the next episode, that was new as well. There weren't a whole lot of examples of that before you get into, say, the mid-2000s when stuff like YouTube started to show up. So from what I understand, is it true that essentially the reason why Homestar Runner exists as a cartoon is that it was kind of a way to practice with Flash? Like you needed to animate something, so why not use this character you created?
Yeah, we were really learning web development stuff. Like, that's why we were learning Flash and graphic design and stuff like that, was like for job type stuff. And we just used the Homestar characters as like, how are we going to learn this new software, Flash?
And more so than we need to animate something, it was like, we need to make something. I mean, I had graduated from film school and moved back to Atlanta from Tallahassee, Florida, and you know, they weren't shooting Avengers movies in Atlanta,
right,
in 1998 or whenever that would have been. They weren't really shooting much of anything other than fantastic local Dixie commercials. And so I, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to do, and like you were not ever going to try and put video on the web at mm-hmm. that point. Like, there was just, I mean, lots of people still had dial-up modems. It was just not something that you could afford the bandwidth for either. So, I mean, we just wanted to make stuff. Mike moved back from, he dropped out of grad school and moved back. And anytime we've been together from when we were kids, we've made stuff together. And so we were like, all right, well, what are we making? And Flash was a way that was like, oh, wait, we don't need, you know, a budget. We don't need a crew. We don't need, you know, to go rent a camera. We don't need film stock or whatever. We can start making content. And so it was like, all right, well, I guess we're going to learn how to animate, because we had done stop motion stuff when we were kids and we were fans of animation, obviously.
Mario Paint.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
We used Mario Paint for the Super Nintendo. But we never, that wasn't what either of us were like schooled in. Mm-hmm. We were always artists and creators of something, but never specifically animation. So we didn't look at it initially as like, oh, we can't wait to start animating. It was more like, this is a way to tell stories, so what is the best thing we have for that medium? And it was like, oh, what if we turn that Homestar Runner character and his friends into a cartoon? And so that was kind of what it was born out of. I mean, the same reason that we would, you know, leave each other dumb answering machine messages, voicemail messages, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, wait, here's some content. I have a medium to produce something on. It's the 30 seconds before the beep happens. Here, Mike, here's my little narrative I'm going to give you when I'm asking you if you remembered to get some High Life at the Publix or whatever. So Flash was kind of the next one of those. You know, it was the next one.
Yeah, and Flash was also easy. I mean, it was easy enough for people that weren't animators to, you know, stumble their way through and produce something that was, you know, halfway decent.
Yeah, so two guys in their apartment with, like, a couple of keyboards could, like, make something that sounded, you know, 75% as good as the, like, at that time, you know, there were these studios making Flash things that had, mm-hmm. like, you'd watch the credits of a 30-second Flash cartoon and it had, like, 30 people involved. One for each second of the cartoon, I guess.
Right, right. And this is so interesting to me because it parallels so nicely with the rise of computer games. I did an episode recently about Sierra Games, which I know you guys love.
Yeah,
I got to talk to Ken Williams.
Nice.
He actually came on. He tried to get Roberta.
I was going to say, not Roberta.
No, he tried to, but she was busy trying to figure out how to work their cable box. So, yeah, and all of that is actually in the episode too. So it's great. But I was very thankful for him to participate. But it was so interesting because the whole reason why Sierra Games got started was that he was programming. Roberta had started to encounter games, and a lot of those games were being written by people who were teaching themselves how to code. So games were great because it was something that had structure, right? You had an idea, you then had to learn how to bring that idea to fruition. And so the game was really the tool they were using in order to educate themselves on how to code. And then eventually the whole industry kind of grew out of that.
And it's very similar to what you guys are saying, like necessity is the mother of invention. You had this tool there. You needed to learn how to use the tool. You had certain limitations placed on you, but those limitations ended up just shaping the direction. Right. It didn't hold you back necessarily. And in fact, I could argue that without those limitations, you could end up being paralyzed by choice, right? You have so many options open to you, you don't even know what to tackle next.
That's why Homestar cartoons are still 550 by 400. Because that was the default in Flash and still animated at 12 frames a second. Those limitations are still 17 years later.
Wow. Yeah, and it's interesting now because we're in an era, the sort of post-Flash era as well, where we're starting to see Flash being, you know, pushed further and further away. No, and there's not really any development on that. And I know that has posed something of a challenge for Homestar Runner as well, because, you know, that whole archive, it's all in Flash. So I'm sure there's the some of it has been ported over to YouTube, obviously, yeah. Which is great because, you know, that's a fantastic way for people to find it. Although I think you guys ended up following a strategy that I've heard several creators say is incredibly important. For you, it was necessary, which was that you created your own space where stuff would go and live in that Homestar Runner's own domain. The Bernie Burns of Rooster Teeth has talked about the same thing, that you need to have a space that's your own, because if you start depending upon someone else's platform and that platform changes,
right,
you're at their mercy. So you are actually ahead of the game, but only because that was the only way you were going to go forward.
Yeah.
Like pioneers, because what else was there to do? But it ended up being, again, like that inspired Bernie Burns over at Rooster Teeth to do the same sort of thing. He knew he didn't want to put everything just on another platform. Like at that time, it would have been like MySpace or YouTube. So it's something that has since gone on to inspire others. So you go in, you start making this cartoon, and you're having a good time. At what point during the process did you start to feel like this was going to be something bigger than just a fun project to do occasionally and become something a little more serious than that?
So we're what, early 2000s here? We've been doing it for a couple years, maybe 2000, 2001 was sort of when we were just, that was the sort of early years. And mm-hmm. I think it was sometime in 2001 when we started doing Strong Bad emails every week. Yeah. I think that was a turning point, and it certainly didn't feel like it at the time. But I think looking back, giving the fans a week, like something to look forward to every week, and knowing, okay, I'm going to check back on Monday morning. I'm going to check back on Monday morning. That sort of snowballed into sort of where we, I don't know.
Yeah, and then we sort of think of the point where we realize, like, oh wait, I think lots of people are watching this, and more than maybe we thought, was when. For the first couple of years, we were just on like a Yahoo shared hosting account. It mm-hmm. was supposed to be like $30 a month, and you got like 5 gigs of bandwidth or something. And I don't know how many cartoons would have been on the website at that point. But I remember printing out this thing, and I think we got kind of a tip off, right, from somebody at Yahoo that was just like, hey, I'm a fan of what you guys are doing. You're going to have to find another solution. And he was like, I've been looking the other way for a while now. And so I get into our account and download the, like, you know, whatever, just bandwidth chart thing. Mm-hmm. And we've done like 13 terabytes of transfer or something.
Wow.
on our 30 or 5 gig, whatever. So we always just pictured this server in the back of some Yahoo data center, like smoking and sparking in the back.
Yeah. And that's when we got shut down at some point, right? That's when the system is down. So the site was actually down for a day or two.
Yeah. But that was kind of when we were like, oh, wow, okay. You know, we'd gotten some emails from people. We knew that there were some, you know, but we just sort of assumed it was like, oh, these few people that know about Flash animation on the web have found our stuff. And that's mm-hmm. awesome. And we thought that was great. I think that was when, that was kind of the moment where we were like, oh, wait, maybe this is something we could do, we could continue to do. And because at the time we still had regular day jobs.
Sure.
And I think that was probably about the same time we decided to sell some merch. And then a year or so into that was when our dad, who was a CPA, basically told his two screw-up artist sons to quit their jobs. He was like, this is dumb. You quit your jobs and make these cartoons for a living, would you? Which is what we always feel like is probably the best moment you could ask for from a father-son.
Oh, yeah. When you've got a chartered public accountant saying, hey, guys, no, you know that regular steady gig you have, quit it. What? That's amazing.
Go make cartoons with your brother in the basement.
Good grief. That's like, dream come true moment right there.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on. Get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Blippi.
Follow your ears. What do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Blippi and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tons and tons of shorts that you guys have made. Lots of wonderful characters, not to mention all the alternate versions of those characters.
That was always the most fun, was to sort of world build and do other, I always enjoyed that.
I love the old-timey ones.
Good. I always like people that like, that's my favorite too, so.
Well, there's a...
sort of polarizing.
To me, it's just the level of absurdity... coupled with the transatlantic accent is my favorite. There's a video that we did here at How Stuff Works about the transatlantic accent. They got me to be the one to do it.
Oh,
and
nice.
I have to say, like, there's certain influences that went into the absolute nonsense that I was spouting off randomly at the end of the video, just to kind of give examples of transatlantic accent. And the old-timey Homestar Runner ones were, way up there.
Nice.
Like, I know what I'm saying has no meaning, but it doesn't matter. So, and also it's just fun to do until somebody really tells you to knock it off. And then it's actually fun to do for about another 5 minutes.
Yeah, you gotta get past that point.
Right. It's the whole thing where you tell a joke until it stops being funny and you keep telling it and it gets funny again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Volume and repetition get louder too. the two keys.
I remember I always think of Sideshow Bob stepping on the rakes in the Patriot episode of The Simpsons. It's like, wait, he's going to do it again. It's like happened so many times that it like was, whoa, but he did it one more time.
And so it was, wow, I didn't, you know, I thought they were going to draw the line at 19.
Yeah.
And then bam, number 20. Right. Well, out of all that massive amount of stuff that you guys have done, are there any things that just stand out in particular in your minds as things like when you came up with it or when you first animated it? It brought you guys just genuine joy, and whether or not it went on to have a life of its own afterward. I'm always interested to hear the kind of stuff that when someone writes it, and I know this gets self-indulgent, but when you write it and you just think, that's great. That's just a great little moment there. You know, even if you have to disassociate yourself with it a little bit, is there anything like that stands out in your mind?
For me, and it may be, I don't know if it's the same for Matt, you mentioned Sierra Games. We did a Peasant's Quest, which was a riff on King's Quest, sort of in the Trogdor universe. And to me, making that whole game was probably the most fun thing we ever did, Homestar related. Just making the graphics for it, making the puzzles, being able to make a game that was not only, it wasn't a parody of those games, it was an homage to those games, and it was those games, you know, like, it was functional, it wasn't just a joke.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like when we made, there's a email, is it 118? What's virus?
118 or 119?
Strong bad email, where he gets a computer virus, and all this kind of crazy stuff happens, and it gets a little, like, meta, and then it ends up with him getting a new computer in the next one. Because he has to sacrifice his computer. But I remember that was one where we stayed up all night. We did, is that another one where we messed with the frame?
Yeah,
in
he goes
Flash,
outside of
like,
the frame.
Yeah, so we resized the size of the movie, but the viewer wouldn't know because we still always had this black border around it. But then at some point in it, the like border moves and sort of like kind of messes with your head in the cartoon. And then there's a part where pop-up ads start showing up in the cartoon, and then we made a real pop-up ad. Like, we did some, I forget what it was. The action script, like, made one happen in your browser, too. So it was this broke the fourth wall, you know, outside of your normal computer realm. And I just remember finishing that one up. Like, I'm pretty sure we stayed up all night for that one. And then the next day, we went to, what, Steak and Shake? Is that what we'd always, like, we'd, like, finish it up and be like, yeah, that's good. And just had a good feeling. And we didn't even, like, go look because we tried not to be, we always want to know, stay in touch with the fans, but never like tried to, you know, we didn't like dissect every comment or every, at the time it would have been like a live journal page or something. Like there weren't just like message boards or comment sections like there are now. But I think we didn't even look at like anything. We're just like, they're all going to love it. Everybody's going to love this one. And we love this one. We had a really good time with it. Let's go get Steak and Shake. That's what we did. That was just I don't know, that sort of moment where you're like confident enough in yourself to be like, I think we did a home run here, and then you know, and then you went back and it was like, oh, I think people did like it. Like,
I remember always thinking along those lines when you would make a good one, it was like, okay, we did a good one, people liked it, and then that my thinking was that, okay, that just buys us three or four bad ones. Like, now they'll forgive three or four bad ones. Every good one you do is like, okay, now I've got a little more currency to mess up.
Well, you know, that also brings me, there was a recent piece I read that was interesting. It was about people who are in the creative industry. They were specifically focusing on YouTubers, but to me, it really could be anyone from Twitch streamers to podcasters to cartoonists, really any creative endeavor, especially a creative endeavor where you're trying to deliver consistent content on like a schedule, that one of the dangers is always this fear of burnout. It's not just the idea of writer's block, which is something that we all deal with at one time or another, where you're staring at the empty page and there's just nothing coming to you. But just that pressure of delivering, especially when you've built up a reputation of certain kind of material, was that ever anything that was threatening you guys while you were working on it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely made things, you know, early on we made cartoons because they were fun. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there was definitely a period where Saturday, Sunday came around and we're like, oh, we don't have no ideas for the strong bit email. We have to make one. And then you just kind of have to power through.
Yeah.
Which is, it wasn't really that big of a deal, but if it wasn't for the expectation that was there, you wouldn't have done it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough when your goal is to entertain someone and it feels like, you know, you're going to have to push through it. Then that adds that extra layer, right? Like
yeah.
You're like, it's not just that I need to do it. I need to do it and make someone laugh. And, yeah.
And I'm not having fun. I don't want to be doing this.
Yeah.
I don't wanna, yeah. But I mean, that's, I think working in that, the way we worked where most of the stuff we did, we made in the 48 hours or so before it was, you know, thrown out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we made most everything from Friday to Sunday.
Wow.
So it was a double-edged sword. I mean, sometimes it was terrible, you know, probably the results were terrible, but other times you use that same energy and it's like, if you sit there for 2 weeks and overthink things, you're going to talk yourself out of something, mm-hmm. some dumb idea that, you know, could have, you know, Trogdor, for instance, is probably something that you think about it long enough. It's like, I don't know, maybe he shouldn't have this beefy arm sticking out of his back. But when you've got, you know, 15 minutes before you're going to put it live, it's just like, oh, let's leave it in. Let's do it.
It's a design choice at this point.
Yeah.
We also had the, I feel like we had the luxury of being able to do kind of whatever we wanted. And so even if there were those times where we were like out of ideas for a strong bad email or something, that's when we'd be like, well, let's do an old timey. What do we want to do? Let's do an old timey cartoon this week. Let's do, you know, we invented like 80s hair metal band for the Homestar universe. We invented a like indie rock band because that's kind of where we were in high school and college. And so it was just sort of like, I just want to make a like indie rock song this week. And so I was like, all right, well, let's invent a band and put it in a cartoon. And then that's, you know, so it was kind of nice where we just have to stop thinking of like, we're delivering this formula to everybody. And a lot of, you know, especially if it wasn't in the form of a strong bad email, I'm sure there were fans that were disappointed, but it was like, all right, well, that's what you got to put up with for like, I didn't get burned out and hated the thing that you like that I do because I got like re-energized by taking a little flight of fancy or whatever and doing something kind of, out of our normal wheelhouse or whatever. And so I think that we would employ that, I think, a good bit too, kind of helped stave off any sort of burnout where it was just like, all right, well, I should shut up because like not only do I get to make cartoons for a living, but I got to like blow off making cartoons and go do, you know, whatever, make a Sierra game or make a like 80s hair metal song this week. So,
well, yeah. And you guys also had stuff on the site that went beyond like the games are a good example. There were various interactive elements on the website besides games and little soundboards and things like that. You had the live action Trogdor trailer, which is one of my favorites, and partly because I know some of the people were on there. When I was watching it, I was like, oh, it's so fun. And that's the beauty of living in Atlanta. And you guys got to work with some great Atlanta talent, which I imagine is just exploding at this point because we've got so many things happening in Atlanta. I'm sure that opens up a lot of different opportunities as well, which is fantastic. But I also want to thank you guys for this idea of being able to branch out and try different things and open up different universes, because I like to imagine that it was one of those weeks where we got blessed with Teen Girl Squad, which is probably my favorite of all of the variations that have come out. It's one my wife and I still quote consistently. So we're always happy whenever we get a Teen Girl Squad. So, you know, the popularity of Homestar grew and grew, and it's really interesting that you guys were, you know, you weren't really focused on the analytics. It's not like you were, you know, watching those counts. Like, you know, there are people who are obsessed over that, whether it was back in the old web days where you had the little visitor counter that would go up by one little digit counter would go up every time, or now it's obviously like YouTube views and subscriptions, that kind of thing. It seems like that was never really something that you guys were terribly focused on or concerned with. You were just, you know, looking at the content and creating that.
Yeah, and we sort of actively didn't look at that because we didn't want, you know, if we did something that we liked, that it maybe didn't get the views that something else, like we didn't want that to affect, like, okay, let's just make another Trogdor or make another Stinko Man or something. So we would actively sort of try to distance ourselves from knowing what was hitting and what wasn't, just so that we could, so it wouldn't mess with the creative process.
Yeah, we talked to a couple of younger YouTube guys a few years ago, and they were talking about how, like, you know, they use the live thing. There's like a live analytics thing on mm-hmm. YouTube. Like, you can upload your video and then right then it's showing you. It's just like any other, you know, Google Analytics thing where you can see who is watching it right now. And if they, and you know, if they commented, I don't know if you know exactly who did what comment, but you know, they're interacting with the comments, or right. they liked, or they, you know, they did the thumbs down or whatever.
Or the moment they stopped watching the video.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like,
exactly.
Yeah. And so he said it was like, it's like he's immediately watching this like focus group, but this is not, he didn't, he's not testing this. This is, he, this guy just made this thing and uploaded it into the world. And now he's having to like watch this judgment happen, like user at
wow.
a time.
Yeah.
And I was just like, how can you do that? And he's like, I know it's terrifying, but I can't, like, I can't look away. Like, I, it's like ingrained as part of the process. And I'm happy that we didn't even, we were just, for a long time, it was, I mean, it was, it's, this will sound like a humble brag or whatever, but it was like, we actually were doing crazy enough amounts of traffic that our, I don't know if it was just that our web hosting guy was like lazy and didn't want to like compile these logs so we could see the, like, because we occasionally would ask, we were like, so what, can we give us our actual numbers and stuff? Like, what are we doing? And he'd always be like, yeah, it's going to take like a couple of days because it's all these like log files and it kind of like chokes on them. And so we just never had those numbers. So I kind of feel fortunate that we didn't, because I think we could have obsessed over that stuff. And now it's carried into, even though we are, you know, we're putting stuff on YouTube now and have a Twitter account and stuff like that. But like, we just don't care mm-hmm. if, like, it kind of helps inform, those decisions now, where I don't think we'll be affected by it, even though it seems like that is the way that if you're going to make money on this stuff, you need to like yeah. get a million viewers and you need to have ad revenue and all that yeah. stuff. But it's kind of like, I'm glad that I'm not sweating that, even if it's not
sure.
Like, it's not like crushing if we put up a new cartoon and it doesn't hit.
You well, know? Yeah. I mean, like, it, again, going back to the example of not putting all your eggs in one basket with the YouTube example, we've just seen YouTube change their policies that, in my mind, really hurt people who specialize in short form content, because a lot of the metrics that they're using is the number of collective hours watched per given amount of time, like per month or whatever. And obviously, if you're producing short form content, you need to have way more people watching your stuff to get that collective number of hours right. up. And it's not a comment on the quality of the content so much as just the quantity of it, which seems kind of backwards to me.
Yeah. So now if you just, I didn't realize that that's, I knew there was a change recently.
Yeah. It was something along the lines of, like, I think it's like, in order to even be considered for monetization at this point, your videos need to have achieved something like 4,000 hours worth of viewing time, which obviously if you're doing short form, and even if you have a engaged, dedicated audience, you got to write a whole bunch of different episodes or
right.
instances in order yeah. to achieve that. Whereas if you are someone who maybe you record a 2-hour or 3-hour gaming session and you upload it, and there's, you know, there's a proven audience for that content, because it's 3 hours and because a lot of those people will watch the entire 3 hours yeah. of material, you rack those hours up much more quickly.
I mean, 140,000 hour video and you're set.
I know, right?
Just watch it yourself.
It's just, wow, I remember when that little black spot was an orange, and now here we are, and it is just desiccated into nothing. Yeah, this isn't good, but it's consistent. It's well, again, a great reason why going into any one platform is a bit of a danger, because you might end up having a policy change that you have no control over, and it's not that your stuff isn't great or that it doesn't have an audience. It's just that because the rules changed above you, you suddenly have a door closed in your face, which seems kind of unfair for anyone who's not like a big time content creator, like one of the superstars. And obviously YouTube has gone through numerous changes over its history. I did a 3-part series about YouTube recently and really talked about how it's changed dramatically. So there's no guarantee that it's going to keep that policy. Maybe if there's enough resistance, they'll change it again. But it's one that draws concern from people who maybe they want to get a start. They have an idea and they want to indulge in that idea, and they hope that it brings delight to others. And maybe one day they could make a living out of it. But it not only is discovery difficult now, but when the rules change like that, it's difficult to even get to the point where you can start monetizing it. You guys, however, had monetized your stuff through mostly through merchandise and without advertising it. That was also interesting to me because, like, I own some Homestar Runner stuff, but it was the sort of thing that I went and searched for, as opposed to, you know, watching a cartoon where halfway through it tells me, hey, by the way, if you want a shirt that has that funny thing that Strong Bad just said on it, you need to click this link here.
Or even at the end, where it wouldn't have really been obtrusive in any way. Our dad always wanted us to do that, and we were always too, our street cred was
more important.
Too valuable, yeah. So
We kind of shot ourselves in the foot. Maybe, we admit
we're
that now.
Amazed that people found that, because it was almost like the store was this Easter egg that you had to, if you really searched for a Homestar shirt, you could find it. But like, we were very reluctant to.
Well, it's funny. In like 2001 or two, we were approached by someone from Hot Topic, and this wasn't like they walked up to us with like a contract for like, hey, we want to turn, you know, your characters into T-shirts and make millions of dollars. But they weren't starting a conversation that could have led to any, you know, any different variation of that scenario. And we just wanted nothing. You know, we didn't want to do it. And we kind of pitched them like, oh, what if we did these other kind of weirder like jokes from our website that weren't like the characters, like they want to do Teen Girl Squad shirts and this other stuff. And we ultimately said no. And I forget who I was talking to, but it was like a small, not like an audience, but I was talking to, but it was a lot younger kids. And I said it thinking that I was like, yeah, and then we got approached by Hot Topic. And like, you know, so of course we said no to that. And then they were all just like stared at me. And they're just like, why did you say no to that? And I was like, because it was Hot Topic. Hot Topic came to us. I was like, you like that would have just killed us instantly. Like, it's like, yeah, maybe a bunch of kids would have bought stuff and whatever. And they're like, yeah, and you would have like made $1 million or something. And I was like, well, I don't know that. And then I probably would have hated what I did after that. And they're just like, that was a bad decision. You made a bad decision and you should have put your stuff in Hot Topics.
It's good to have life lessons, really, is what it comes down to.
But I don't know. I get to...
I like to think then the Homestar Runner is therefore responsible for the shut up and take my money meme. but I mean, that I appreciate that too, because it was that sort of... philosophy that sort of it while it wasn't something that was being overtly stated, it was something that a lot of fans appreciated, and you know, taking the effort to try and find a way of supporting was great, because it was a show early on that, you know, I think a lot of stories about internet content focus on the negatives, like the idea of people who don't want to pay for content so they find workarounds so that they can get it for free,
right?
But the opposite is also true, where you'll find people who are encountering content that is seemingly being presented. I mean, there was no advertising. You know, there was nothing where there was like a donate button or anything. It was like there's a store and you could go there and you could purchase things. And they said, you know, I want to support the content creators that I love and the stuff I love. I want them to keep making the stuff because I'm enjoying it. And it tells you that there's really a place for that too. And of course, now we see platforms like Patreon that have come out to do more direct support of artists that have proven that point, that there are people who are willing to do that if you give them the opportunity.
Right. We've had people tell us like, yeah, I bought 10 Homestar Runner shirts. I never wear them. I didn't, after the second one, I didn't need any more.
Well, yeah. Like, and
I
now,
did it to support you.
Yeah. Well, and people will say like, you know, I've purchased enough merch. Like it's not that I don't love you, but I don't need any more t-shirts. Can you please start a Patreon or something so I can give you some money every once in a while when I want to? I just don't need another Homestar shirt. And so that's good to hear that people are willing to do that.
Every kid at my local elementary school now has a Homestar Runner shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
The thrift store in my neighborhood is stocked full.
But that's a great story, because it tells you that what you have created has actually had a meaningful impact on people. And I know it sounds weird to call it a meaningful impact when you're talking about a world that has a character called the Poopsmith, but it's true. And it's great, because again, I think it illustrates that positive side of the internet. And we so quickly focus on that negative side. And it's good to have something you can point at and say, well, you know, look at this. It shows that if you have the structure in place and if you have the right content in place, people flock to it and people want to support it. And you guys have also, you know, I mentioned, you know, you were incorporated into the Buffyverse in an episode. You've had lots of references in various types of pop culture. What was that like, seeing the thing that you had created start to get referenced by other like pop culture icons, everything from, and they might be giants. I mean, making music for you.
Yeah, that one was pretty amazing because we were huge They Might Be Giants fans growing up. So when they emailed us, that was pretty mind blowing.
Yeah.
We heard from the Buffy thing, I think, was like somebody at Fox was like, hey, don't sue us. Nobody here knows what you guys are, but we put a Trogdor reference in this upcoming episode. Joss is a big fan. And they sent us was it in Entertainment Weekly? There was some picture that they referenced and he had a Strong Bad shirt on in like on set of something he was shooting.
Uh-huh.
And so that was really cool. But yeah, that was at the time, that was pretty mind blowing just to know that it's like, okay, so people outside of, you know, whatever weird world we thought we existed in as far as fan bases go, people were finding that stuff. And we've since found out things like, at that time, it was a friend of ours worked with Damon Lindelof and said that it was like, me and Joss Whedon would get in trouble. I was supposed to be writing Lost episodes and we'd be quoting Strong Bad to each other or something. I was like, holy crap, I was watching Lost when you were wasting time watching what I was making. That's amazing. So that kind of stuff has been super cool. What was the show? That show, The Magicians, that's on now. Mm-hmm. This was it was nice because it felt like a nice little bookend to the like Buffy thing, where I guess they reference Trogdor in I think it's the season 2 finale or something. And I still haven't even seen it. Everybody told me or sent me little clips of it or whatever. Which that's always it's always cool to see that stuff.
Yeah, and then that actually led to other things like collaborations where you guys did the animations for a They Might Be Giants video, which is fantastic. And you've appeared on, well,
yeah, we've done several collaborations with them.
The characters have appeared on stage where They Might Be Giants because I've been to some of those shows.
Oh, nice.
At the Variety Playhouse. And that was always a joy to the point where I would imagine that was part of the inspiration for them to come up out with their band, the sock puppets.
The avatars of they,
where they would, when I would see that come out, I was like, This is mind blowing that this is happening right now, and seeing Homestar and Strong Bad in person is always a big thrill for me. Despite it's so weird to say that out loud to the people who actually made that, but it's absolutely true. So you go through you're doing the series. It's got some not just fan support, but it's also blossoming in various areas of pop culture. We see Trogdor get into Guitar Hero 2, which is still another amazing thing. When I found out that was a bonus track, I was so thrilled. And immediately I was like, this is my quest to master Trogdor. That solo, by the way, impossible.
Hey, you want to know something? This is what we didn't find this out until later, or I think we knew it, but we didn't realize it. So we played as Limousine, the band that plays
yes.
other ones, live. And so we play with these guys that are in this band Yacht Rock and mm-hmm. another band called Saved by the Band. And our they learned the song. And so our friend that plays guitar for us, Chris Arison, he learned the song. He's like really knows his stuff as far as like squealy, wanky guitar.
Yes.
That's amazing. He can do the tapping. He can do all this stuff. And it's incredible. And so he learned Trogdor. And then we came into practice and he played it. And he like nails that solo. And then one of the other guys was like, you know, when we originally recorded that, because he wasn't on that song, he was like, that's keyboard.
That's a keyboard arpeggio thing. It's just like playing four notes.
Yeah. And he was like, wait, what? And he was like, yeah, no one can play that fast. And he was like, oh, well, I learned it. And so, it didn't surprise me when I learned that. I think we kind of told the harmonics people that at the time. And they're like, it's fine. We'll make it the guitar solo.
That's fantastic. And I've watched YouTube videos of people who have done the perfect run on that, on the hardest setting, and it's just mind blowing. I can't see as fast as they're playing, which is the crazy thing.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. and you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's CONCUR.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride, we're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places, like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Blippi.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Blippi and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But then we get up to about 2010, and it was then when you guys were starting to get other opportunities that that also were pulling you away from Homestar. And as I understand it, it was getting to a situation where it wasn't that you wanted to leave the series. It was that you were having, you know, other demands on your time, whether it was family or it was other gigs that were coming up. And it just became one of those things where week after week, it just wasn't, you just didn't have the time to dedicate to making more content for Homestar Runner. Is that more or less accurate for how things turned out?
Yeah, I mean, we had no idea how long it was going to be either. I mean, Matt's second daughter was born. I think that was basically when we stopped doing stuff, and we didn't know if it was going to be, oh, let's take a break for 2 months.
Yeah.
Or 4 years.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, you take those breaks and then other things come up, and obviously you've got all these commitments on your time. And then you're thinking, well, how do I communicate this to a fan base?
Yeah. And then at some point it was like, wait, we've waited too long. Or like, is it weird to try to say something when we don't know what we're saying? We don't know, you know, like if we're going to say, hey, we'll do some Homestar stuff in a year. We, you know.
Yeah, there was no definitive answer. And then at that time we didn't know. We had like a development deal at Disney and a development deal at Nickelodeon, and we were going to make some Yo Gabba Gabba episodes and these things that were just like, that doesn't mean anything to a Homestar fan. And maybe we undervalued that. Maybe they would have been excited to hear that stuff. But then it was like, that Nickelodeon thing went nowhere and that Disney thing went nowhere. And so that would have been like, after the fact, would have been like depressing that I was like, oh, they were like, oh yeah, so their Disney thing didn't work out and Nickelodeon thing didn't work out. And oh, that like Neo Gabba Christmas episode they directed was horrible. And like, I don't know. So it just felt weird, especially because we never, aside from being like, we intimated that like we'd had babies and so we're going to take some time off. That's kind of the only time Mike and I ever sort of inserted our like creator lives into the fans' heads. I mean, we always intentionally, aside from some like fake things on a DVD where we're in, like spoofing how we make things, we wanted us to be separate from it. We never wanted to have the like creator blog side of it.
And sure.
Definitely not the like the way that most of the like YouTube personalities are like, even if their content is not that, they're like always after the fact. It's like, hey, I'm the star of the YouTube thing you just watched. Jim, remember to go to the store and buy the new merch and blah, blah, blah. It's always just like, we didn't want to be the face of any of it, you know?
That's fair.
So it felt weird to then have that conversation after like never really talking to the fans as Mike and Matt, at least through the website, to like give a weird half-assed explanation of like, I don't know. We don't know. That was the, you know, and, sure. And then that just felt like I would be super unsatisfied if I just got a, we don't know what's going on from the creator of my thing that I liked. So I don't know. We always apologize. We didn't handle it right. We didn't know how to handle it right. And we like, it was so funny. The day before we put up the first cartoon we made in forever, which was this April Fool's cartoon in 2014.
Yeah,
I think.
Right.
I got somebody found my like personal email address, a fan, and sent this like pages long thing, like tearing us apart and saying that it's like
radio silence.
Yeah. And for, and just being like, here's this, what this meant to me here. Like every week, like it was, so it was like the first half was like super awesome fan, like testimonial. And the second half was like, and here's why I hate you and will never support anything you've ever done ever again. And like literally we're finishing up this cartoon to send, like to upload at like midnight. I get this at like, I don't know, 7 PM the day before. And, I wrote back and I just said like, hey, I'm so sorry. Thanks for being a fan, and just kept it vague and sort of hoping that then that maybe that cartoon would happen and that they would be like, wait, they listened and they made that cartoon.
What an amazing turnaround.
The last half an hour, they made this cartoon for me.
So that was the main reason. The explanation was never like exciting enough to like,
sure,
to like feel like, to like peel behind the curtain and be like, hey, look behind here, we're making a new project. Cause none of those projects ever really happened.
I was just gonna say we actually made a Strong Bad sort of addressing talking to the fans about it. Mm-hmm. And I forget when that was. That was maybe 6 months or so after we had stopped doing stuff, and we made this thing and then never ended up putting it up because we were just like, this is weird. We showed it one time at a conference we were at last year.
And it went over kind of weird.
Yeah.
So, right. I think we made the right call.
I think my favorite, I'm also fortunate in that because I live in Atlanta. I'm a frequent patron of Dad's Garage Theater. So I actually got to see the special Strong Bad email Dad's Garage Theater because I've been supporting them since 2000. So I was there at their old theater, and when they went to move into Seven Stages for a while, and now they have their new theater. And that was one of the things they showed one night, and the crowd reaction when that came on was pretty phenomenal. They showed it at the Fox Theater.
Oh,
they
had
they had a special event, a special fundraiser at the Fox Theater, and it was kind of a variety show of giving an example of the sort of material that they would do. And they showed the Strong Bad special email to Dad's Garage, and hearing the Fox Theater erupt in applause at a Strong Bad email was something really special.
That's awesome. I think that was the second cartoon. I think that was the next thing we made after that April Fool's in 2014 was that Strong Bad email. So it had been 4 or 5 years since we had made a Strong Bad email.
Was the reaction to that April 1st, 2014 video, was that something that was really gratifying for you guys? Because I know, at least in my own personal circle of friends, when people found out that there was a new Homestar Runner cartoon up, it went nuts on my Facebook page. I mean, like it was like what half of my friends were sharing. So I imagine, like, when you've been kind of away from it for 4 years, was it surprising to you to see a reaction?
I think Gizmodo and some of the blogs had, you know, linked to it. So that was surprising. And, you know,
yeah, we didn't know. We just sort of assumed that the few people that sadly still check homestarrunner.com entered this URL into their their yellowed keys of their mechanical keyboard.
Yeah, because Strongbad didn't have a Twitter yet or anything, right? I mean, there was really no, I guess we had a YouTube page, but we didn't. So there was really no way to communicate to the fans that, hey, we've got this new cartoon up unless you went to the site.
Know if anyone would really see it. And then if people did stumble across it, if they would, you know, be excited about it or pass it on or whatever. So that was cool. And that definitely led to, it just sort of coincided with the fact that I was living in LA at the time when we made that, actually. And then but I knew my family was moving back to the Atlanta area. And so the fact that Mike and I were going to be back in the same town again, and that, like, it was like, oh, it seems like people don't hate us and maybe want to see more things. It just kind of was like, all right, well, if we're back in the same town again, we should at least start doing stuff as, you know, often as we can, between whatever other gig we were doing.
Yeah, so since then we've been doing Homestar stuff, you know, every few months or, you know, depending on what the other stuff we're working on is. So
sure. So what other stuff are you working on, since we know that Homestar Runner is in good hands, it's going to continue coming out and keeping hope alive, so that when we do that jump to Homestar Runner, there's a good chance there's going to be something new there. But what else are you guys working on?
We're just talking to, for the first time ever, we've been talking with Adult Swim locally here.
Oh, wow.
Which is, and so we'll see. We have no idea if that will go anywhere or not. But we've known people that have worked on shows there. We've known, you know, creators of shows there and stuff before, but had never actually spoken with them. And it's great, because there's a hilarious, I think it's been debunked enough now, but for a very long time, if we would ever talk to people, not that we do so many interviews, but it would come up, they'd be like, and I heard that you guys stormed out of an Adult Swim meeting and said no to them. And we were like, no, I mean, I don't know if there was ever an overture either way. And we love that channel. And
you probably heard the Hot Topic story.
Yeah, exactly. But so that's exciting. So for the first, we were just like, yeah, they're down the street. It kind of makes sense. Like, I moved to LA, even though there was like an entire Cartoon Network, you know, here as well.
Yeah, everyone assumed when they find out we're from Atlanta, like, oh, you guys must, you know, work with Cartoon Network and Adult Swim. And it's like, no, we do stuff with Disney and Nickelodeon that are 3,000 miles away.
But so that's exciting. So we'll see where that goes. And what else? Unless just, yeah, we've been doing other Homestar stuff. We have a couple of Homestar, like, sort of top secret-y things that we'll be revealing soon that'll be exciting, that we've been spending a lot of, that take a lot of sort of build-up time.
Secret time. Fantastic.
I've been, speaking of Sierra games, there's a park down at the end of my street, and so I've been making King's Quest-style graphics of a couple little parts of the park. There's
awesome.
A little waterfall, and so I made this little King's Quest-looking waterfall.
Oh, man.
Yeah. This is what Mike does.
Roy Moss Sr. Memorial Garden. It's called a garden, and it is not a garden in the sense of the word.
It's one of those just,
it's
like
a retention.
Straight runoff retention. Yeah. But
I guess that doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
Yeah, but it's heavily featured in the Peasant's Quest live action.
Yeah,
trailer,
fantastic. Yeah. Jonka Cave, yeah.
Oh, man. And I also have to give you guys props for Two More Eggs, because I've been...
Yeah, so that was, we did that with Disney for 2 years. We ended last, you know, summers or so. But so that was really good. That was great. We made 90 shorts, little shorts for Disney.
Panda Practice is one of my favorites.
Oh, nice. That was our that was the last five we did.
Yeah,
that was
our swan song.
Yeah, that was our most fun. We did that with our daughters. So our three daughters are the voices. And so that was, glad you liked it. That was fun. That one's certainly fun to make.
That was good to know, too. We actually get that back. So we can actually try and give Panda Practice some more life. A bunch of the stuff we made for Disney, like, that they own.
We can't
do anything else with. But Panda Practice is one of those few that's like, especially like making cartoons with your kids, there's nothing better than that. So maybe that'll find more life.
My daughter's 11.
Yeah, she's not going to want to do that with you anymore.
No, it's just
I am so
their voices
over.
Are going to be changing. Yeah. We're not going to be able to.
I recommend to my listeners, if you have not seen the series Two More Eggs, go to YouTube, and especially the Panda Practice episodes. They are amazing. And they will make you want to play drums on people's faces.
As a local Atlantan too, did you get our Lois Reitzes?
Yes, immediately did. Yes, as I was watching it, I was like, This is so clearly a beautiful homage to the Atlanta, a treasure of Lois Reitzes.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've been hearing that voice forever, and yeah, it's not meant in any sort of insulting way.
No, you
I
could
hope
tell.
I do it. I hope it's respectful.
I could tell as I was listening. Like this is someone who has genuine affection for that voice. It's not making fun of that voice, and she's also a friend of Dad's Garage Theater. So sometimes you hear that voice if you go to see a show there, which is amazing. So again, that's the other thing I love about watching your content is that it gives me another connection to my home. So it's always fun. And to occasionally explain to people where certain little things come from is always kind of fun too, because it gives them a chance to go down that rabbit hole that the internet was really created for. I mean, ultimately, that's what the internet is, right? It's just one giant black hole of information.
There's a... one of the series we did for Two More Eggs is called Tronkles. It's this fake British show.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a part with some of the background drawings of buildings and structures in this town of Tronkles are local buildings like around Decatur. So
wonderful.
Keep your eyes open for the library at Decatur High School, which is this weird sort of that appears there. Yeah.
Yep. I know it well. Oh, man. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on Tech Stuff and spending this time. I really appreciate it. It's been a thrill for me. And anyone out there who's not familiar with your work, they need to go out and seek it out, because it's that level of surreal absurdity that just... The first time I think anyone watches anything, they might just be confused. And then after they watch the same thing a second time, they're like, okay, I'm starting to get it. And then next thing you know, they've watched the same thing 15 times. And then you say, you realize there's 900 more of these, right? that you can watch and in sequence or out of sequence, if you prefer. You can really just jump around if you like. But it's great. I can't wait to make more references with my friends. I really hope that we can get that giant trog door portrait with the cutouts over to the Georgia Renaissance Festival. I really think I'll talk to the entertainment director. I know him, so we'll see if we can get over there.
Hidden somewhere, like off, like in some forest somewhere, where you have to like sort of
be fantastic.
Go off the beaten path.
I know exactly
it.
Where it should go. It's like. Listen, I know it's a big hill, and I know it looks like there's not much up there. But if you look, you will find treasure. Right? Like, trust me. Thank you so much for joining the show. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so that's it for this episode of Tech Stuff. Thank you for tuning in. Well, my guests were a small piece of potato that has been sitting inside a transistor radio since the 1970s. Thank you for being on, Potato. Yes, that's nice, Potato. All right. And so join me next week when my guests will be... What's that? Apparently it'll be that same piece of potato next week. Thank you very much. Don't forget to support this podcast if you like what you're listening to. Next week, I hope to raise it maybe to $16.
That was an interview with the creators of Homestar Runner, and we're going to move right on along. So if you want to keep listening to the playlist, we've got a lot more coming. And let me know what you guys think, if there are things you would like me to cover as we go through all this. I've got a big series about the PlayStation coming up soon. But if there are any other topics you would like me to cover, reach out on Facebook or Twitter. The handle for both is TechStuffHSW, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's C-O-N-C-U-R.com.
It's brand new season 2.
I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.